Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, it's October 18th, 2016. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. We'll be talking about beer and barbecue and food and beer pairings tonight. Justin Kennedy, our producer, is on the show with us.
Hey, what's up, Jimmy?
All right, man. So you travel all over the place. You go to festivals.
Yep.
You know, what's the latest festival you went to?
I just got back from the Great American Beer Festival in Denver, Colorado.
And I bet there were some really interesting food and beer pairings.
Yeah, they had a whole thing called Paired, which is a section of the festival where you can go out and have different little bites with different beers. And it was a really cool aspect that they introduced maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
There's some great people that work on that with Julia Hertz.
Yep.
I don't know who else is involved, but...
They do that one in D.C. Yeah, that's in the early summer. But this is kind of, I guess, a very similar idea to Savor, but on a smaller scale. And with, you know, it's a festival within a festival. So it's a really cool thing.
It's great. Thanks to our sponsors, Union Beer Distributors, supplier of world-class ales and lagers. You can tweet us live at @beer_sessions. Maggie's doing the tweets. And, you know, we'll be talking about beer and barbecue, food and beer pairings. We got our good buddy, Daniel Delaney.
Hey.
We first met. He was the one of the first Brisket Kings of New York City winners just when he was starting up Brisket Town a few years ago.
Yeah, a long time ago. What is that? I guess that was 3 years ago now?
Four years ago, yeah.
Yeah, long time.
You were on. It was like the heyday, and Mighty Quinn's had just opened. You won the Judge's Award, and he won the People's Choice.
Yep.
But that was right when people started realizing, wow, and I think Hometown Barbecue was just opening. Mm-hmm. People were just starting to say, barbecue's coming.
It really is, yeah. I mean, it's gone so far in New York since then. I still have the crown. It's sitting on, like, it's hanging above my desk. It's one of my, like, main trophies. One of the things I'm very proud of.
Well, that was what was so cool is that when you were starting, you kind of brought a lot of media and you know, your own kind of chutzpah. You know, to that event because you're opening up.
Well, you got to fake it before you make it. You know what I mean? Like I had no clue what I was doing. We just bought it. I just got the smoker and dragged it up from Texas and thought I would, you know, try and convince New Yorkers that brisket would be a good thing to eat and try and convince myself that owning a restaurant would be a reasonable career.
You know, for aspiring restaurateurs and barbecue folk and even breweries, because all breweries want to have barbecue or some food component. You know, what were some of your inspirations when you were just starting out? Like, what made you want to smoke brisket? I mean, you may make the best brisket in New York City. One year you did as Brisket
sure,
King
yeah,
in New York City.
Yeah. The interest in barbecue was because I was making videos about food and traveling the country, and I got down to Texas making these like web videos. At the time, this is like kind of YouTube wasn't as big; these were all going out on iTunes, and they were about food trucks. And so I was like down in Texas for a while, and that's when I first met. Well, on the same trip, I it was like a tour de force. I had both the brisket from Louis Miller Barbecue out of Taylor, Texas. Not in Taylor, Texas. He was actually part of... I don't know if you... Do you know Jane and Michael Stern, the roadfood.com?
Yeah, we followed them.
Yeah, so Road Food does this festival in New Orleans, Road Food Festival. They bring a lot of heritage restaurants from the United States down there. And to represent Texas, they pulled Wayne over from Louis Miller Barbecue. And he... And I was just, you know, like... I don't know how old... I was young and very unfamiliar with the restaurant scene at the time, just trying to figure out how to make it as like a video journalist. And Michael Stern brought me around and introduced me to all these people and Wayne just like covered in black pepper and grease and smoke, just like carved off this like nugget of fatty brisket and just gave it to me. And we weren't rolling. He just fed this to me. I mean, he didn't put it in my mouth. He just handed it to me,
but he wanted to.
And it was better than any, it was better. It was the best piece of meat that I had ever consumed. Like, it was just, it was sort of like, I didn't know. I mean, I'm sure it's like maybe the first time somebody has like a craft beer after drinking just Budweiser or their whole life or something like this, right? Like, you have this moment of discovery where you're like, shit, I didn't know that. My mouth could do that. I didn't know my mouth could enjoy or, you know, and at this point I was really just starting to get into the food scene in general. I wasn't reading Eater. I didn't know what was hot. You know, I was very naive at this moment. And so, but I was clearly able to detect that this was remarkable, and it was, and it is today. It's still clearly one of the best in the world. You know what I mean? And we can say that, right? 'Cause it's like, you know, it is one of the best in the world. And then after that, I shot down to Texas, and this is when I met Aaron from Franklin Barbecue. And he was, I would have to dig and figure this out, but it must have been in his first few months of being open. You know, this was not, he was not the James Beard Award winner, headliner, you know, world-class chef that he was today. This is on the side of I-35 in a trailer. This is while the line was manageable. And he was also just getting started after doing ultimately what we eventually went on to do, which was sort of host all these events and such. And he was slinging equally amazing barbecue and seeing, it really wasn't, I mean, the food was one part, but seeing the culture around barbecue, seeing how much joy the food brought to people, it was a type of like communal eating that growing up in New Jersey, like I didn't have that at all. That idea of like getting around some type of food, having it be a persistent part of your life, it was just not at all part of what I ever experienced growing up. And so I was equally in love and enthralled with the food, but also at the same time, this togetherness that was prompted and sparked by this food and the traditions around it.
I know some of those old, like Mueller's in particular, like those old great Texas barbecues, they kind of started out as butchers, didn't they? They were like Germans, they were butchers, and then they were cooking off their extra cuts.
Yeah, I mean, with when we look at the history of Louis Mueller Barbecue, they basically started as a grocery store, and which had a meat section, and they had a lot of waste, or they had food that needed to be preserved, and so they were pulling a lot of these techniques from German and Czech ancestors for food preservation. At the same, I mean, it's not that clear of a story. There are also other things happening in Texas at the time. There's a lot of railways are being built. There's a lot of construction happening, and a lot of the folks that were working in construction at the time just needed sustenance. They needed lunch. They needed a hot lunch, and so these cheap cuts of meat, which would have gone to waste, were being cooked and served with whatever was available. And so when you look at Texas barbecue and the history of it, often you're not seeing a rich history in sides. You're not seeing a rich history in sauce. And that's not because people were being defiant and petitioning against it. It's because you were eating this out of the back of a grocery store. And so what you could get in the grocery store was a jar of hot sauce and use it. You could get some pickles. You could get a wedge of avocado, a wedge of onion, a wedge of cheese. And a lot of the really historical places that are still around still honor a lot of those traditions. If you go to a place like Kreitz in Lockhart, you won't find a drop of barbecue sauce. You could buy an avocado. You can get a few slices of brisket and eat an avocado with it, or a raw onion, or a whole tomato, just like you would at a grocery store. But you're not going to see barbecue sauce in a place like that.
You know, there's one thing when we talk about food like this does make me want to drink. whether I'm going to have a little beer or wine, kind of finish my palate. Justin, what beer are we drinking? This seems like something that would go well with a brisket.
That's kind of why I picked it. It's called Unjunked. It's a new beer from Carton Brewing in New Jersey. And it's 8.5% pretty hearty stout. And I think this would definitely go really well with barbecue. It's got a lot of strong flavors. It's got some coffee flavors and some chocolate flavors. And it's got a lot of booze. And I think it would stand up well to smoked brisket.
It's great, and it's something that I was saying to Jimmy right before we got started, when we opened, it's only now after, I guess, like 3.5 Well, I mean, the restaurant's 4 years old now, but it's only now that we're really starting to put energy into building a better beer list. Like, you know, when we got started, I mean, our restaurant, Brisket Town in Williamsburg, is so small. We don't have a lot of things there, like a draft system. We don't have walk-ins and whatnot. So we were very limited from the beginning as to, like, what we would be doing. And then on top of it, like, I didn't open this to I didn't get into this to open a restaurant. I just wanted to figure out how to smoke some meat. Like, very primitive thoughts at the time. So, like, you know, when we got the doors open and people started walking in and they're asking for, like, you know, I had no beer knowledge, no wine knowledge at the time. And so we really just historically just stuck with the things that seemed to be mainstream enough that people would want. Like, we'd buy Lone Star because it's Texas.
That makes sense.
We'd buy Shiner because mm-hmm. Texas. I like Abita, so I was buying it because I have this, you know, hard on for New Orleans. I love it down there. And so, there was no like formal education behind how we were sourcing. We're trying to, like, even now, like, break out of that and become more mature with that selection.
I think those are great barbecue beers. I mean, they're traditional. I think if you go to Texas, you're not going to find, you know, maybe I don't know. I've never been to Franklin, but maybe there they have craft beer. I don't know.
Today we can, taste through some beers that might be good for your shop. When I think about Texas, I always think about Jester King now. You know, like his real farm. They're in Austin, like a real farmhouse,
right?
You know, saison type brewery that's working with a farm and farm ingredients. I don't know if you've heard of them.
No, Jester I haven't. King.
Yeah, I mean, what are some styles like that you could get in New York City?
I mean, you can get Jester King every once in a while in New York City, but I'm trying to think who nearby does similar things to Jester King. Kent Falls up in Connecticut does some similar things, and they do bottled, you know, packaging, not just draft. Plan B, of course. Threes.
Brooklyn has some saisons that,
And I think you've done stuff at Threes, right,
Dan? Yeah. Actually, we have some of the owners of Threes are partners in the restaurant.
Oh, okay.
So we have a good relationship.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, maybe you can speak to this. The question is, like, what is the role of education? What is the responsibility of a restaurant to also be an educator, right? Like, and when we opened this up, when we got started, we were just like, well, what is the thing that we don't have to think about, which is why we source these sort of very easy, drinkable, and familiar names. But the question is, you know, should a restaurant be supporting? Should a restaurant be furthering an educational process? Is that the responsibility? I don't know.
And that's a good question.
I think so. Yeah, I think you should be. I mean, obviously, it's a place to go and have fun, but it's also a place. You know, it's a huge learning opportunity for educating not just about the food, but also about pairings and other things. And if you and your staff can become knowledgeable and, you know, versed in that, you can pass it along to thousands, if not, you know, tens of thousands of people every year.
You know, with the beer list, I mean, if you're having like a barbecue program, you kind of know your flavor profiles. You know, most like one good place, John Brown Smokehouse in Queens.
Yeah.
He actually does have a really great beer list. Like, he goes out of his way to have a wide range of
exceptional
craft
beer list. Yeah,
yeah, and most barbecue places don't. I mean, you can get by with a good Pils and a Shiner Bock and, you know, some IPAs. But as the show progresses, we're going to talk about some of our favorite, for me, beer and food pairings, but in particular some barbecue and beer. Maybe we'll have some ideas for you. I mean, off the top of my head, for many years at the Pig Island event, which you were just at this year, good buddy Sam Barbieri, who is a competitive barbecue guy, also owns the Waterfront Ale House, he would greet us every morning with his own head cheese and a bottle of Rodenbach, which is a nice Flemish sour Belgian ale. So I would put out there first that you need to get a Rodenbach, which comes in bottles, and it's a Flemish sour that goes really well at cutting the fat, and especially in some of the pork products. So I don't know. Do you agree with me?
Yeah, it's got a lot of nice, like, roasty, malty notes, but it's also, like, super acidic and almost like a red wine. Like, it's got some real tannins, I think, too.
Yeah, and it's funny. Rather than looking at Texas, Belgium is a country where there's a lot of longstanding beer and food pairing, you know, ideas. And they have a lot of sour beers, and sour beers can help cut real spicy food and real fatty food. So you might want to have, and a lot of new breweries are making different types of sour beers. So you might want to have a sour component.
And that's the other thing. I think that when we approached this, we also went to, like, you know, we have to stick to the stars and stripes and only source domestically because it's barbecue.
And you can
totally
do that now. Yeah. You can find an American-made Flemish Red, I'm sure, fairly easily right now. So, yeah, that wouldn't be too hard to do.
Yeah. If someone wants to tweet us a good American-made Flemish Red at @beer_sessions. Yeah. Hey, we'll be back in a few minutes. We're talking beer and barbecue on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, we got Daniel Delaney from Brisket Town, Delaney Barbecue. We're talking mostly about Texas barbecue culture. It's kind of fun, and we interjected some of our favorite beer and barbecue pairings. I suggested Rodenbach and Head Cheese. And
I got a favorite, Jimmy.
All right.
Founders Dirty Bastard Scotch Ale with pretty much any kind of barbecue.
And when have you had that? Or
the first time I had it was at what's the place near you? The barbecue place,
Mighty Quinn's.
Yeah, Mighty Quinn's. They always have that beer on draft, and that's the first time I had it on my birthday a few years ago. And I thought it was an exceptional pairing, so I would recommend that one.
That sounds good. And there was that cool moment when both Daniel at Brisket Town and Mighty Quinn's were both in this Brisket King of New York event that we do, and Daniel won Judge's Choice, and Mighty Quinn's won the People's Choice. But that was like that coming of age when, you know, I never really thought about brisket that much. I think definitely in New York, like, people of like kosher or Jewish backgrounds grew up with just different types of brisket. But for me, I never was really into it. It took my friend Jake Schiffman at Food Network years to twist my arms to put on a brisket event. But, you know, now we're seeing so many different people making good brisket.
It's pretty amazing how that all happened at the same moment, right? Like, There was clearly a moment 4 years ago, 3.5 years ago, where like so much exploded on the barbecue scene in New York, and that you know surely can't be just coincidence, right? It's like, or maybe it is. I don't know. There's I think it's somehow magical that like both us and Mighty Quinn's and Fletcher's and Billy from Hometown and everybody decided that this is the thing that New York needed. And I mean, I can't recall another, maybe like donuts or something, but I can't recall another moment where there was so much emphasis on a single type of food. And it's amazing. And it's amazing to see, you know, a locale like New York become enthralled with something that just was not really part of the history. Or, I mean, brisket was, but only in the form of delis, right? The Katz's and Carnegie and, you know. I think it's pretty neat to see how much New Yorkers have not only grown to like it, but have become fanatical about it.
Do you think there's a style, Daniel, like a New York City barbecue style at this point? I mean, I've seen a few articles about that recently, and it seems like there's some disagreement between people in the barbecue world, so...
You know, I, this is good. What is this?
Yeah, I was thinking this next beer.
Sorry, this is not a pumpkin ale. This is a sour smoked porter, also from Garden Brewing.
Well, I know you hang out with Augie a lot on Steal This Beer, but yeah. Augie's one of the better like beer and food pairing guys in the city. His claim to fame was at 11 Madison Park. He had a pairing on the menu. It was like, was it duck? And you remember what it was, Maggie?
Yeah, it was the duck. Decoy.
Decoy beer with the duck.
With the duck dish,
it was made with every spice that they used to roast the duck with, that he used it in his beer.
Yeah, that's great. But that's, I was going to say, as soon as I tasted this, it's a little sour. Then I thought this should go with brisket.
Yeah, for sure.
You really need this like sour finish.
When we started sourcing, I'll go back to your question, but when we started sourcing the beers, the like very simple, oddly enough, we actually have been only serving natural wines from the beginning at the restaurant, which is weird that we would, I think, have that emphasis, but then not have the same consideration towards beer until recently.
I see that a lot.
But all of the selection, both of beer and wine, was always oriented towards things that felt very drinkable, things that could be refreshing, and things that we thought could like just cut through the... It's not just the richness, it's just the density of eating all this meat. I think this would go really well.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm saying. I think that you could have almost all sour beer list. I mean, there's so many new beers like this that have, you know, I don't know, there's probably a kettle sour, something with a little
it
sour.
It is a kettle sour, and the name of the beer is really strange. It's called Tuong Brew, Thanks for Everything, Julie Brumar. And it's a fabulous sour smoked milk porter. It's a one-off that they made. I have no idea what the background of this is. But.
Well, Carton's made some crazy beers that they're food-oriented. You know, he made a panzanella beer where he had cucumbers and tomatoes in it.
Really?
And the grain of the beer was the bread.
Got it.
And some other crazy ones. Cosmonaut-type beer with, he put in powdered ice cream.
Astronaut ice cream, yeah.
Yeah, a Russian imperial style.
Are they out in New York?
No, in New Jersey. Atlantic Highlands near Sandy Hook.
Very good.
Yeah. I liked the truffle one, the white.
Oh, the truffle
one.
Beer.
That
too,
was
yeah.
amazing.
Yep. Cheers to Augie Carton, man. It's great stuff he's done. And now his old brewer Jesse Ferguson opened up Interboro.
Yeah, he was on last week actually.
Yeah, they're making some good beers. But you know, going back to Texas style. So what do you think? The sour finish is especially
great.
As a wine drinker.
Oh, it's great.
A lot of people say wine drinkers are drawn to sour beers.
Yeah, I totally see the correlation. So is this guy mostly doing like? There seems something comical about this, right? Like there's
oh for sure, yeah. It's totally tongue in cheek, I think, but it's delicious.
Is like the beer community at this point where it's becoming self aware and that's like really received well.
Yep, for sure. Yeah,
we should give it a go. So
it's really hard to get
that. You can get Carton in New York from Union Beer.
They have it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Texas. The question was: is there a trend? Is there a style of barbecue in New York?
It's emerging as all you guys open and
so
evolve.
You talk to each of the. You know, folks that we're recognizing now in New York as being people that are driving the barbecue scene, and I think that each of us have a very different opinion. I think that I've known for a while that Fletcher's feels strongly that they do Brooklyn barbecue. I think that that's Billy's sense too. I know that Hugh over at Mighty Quinn's Barbecue looks at them as themselves as a fusion between Texas and Carolina. I think that I'm the most conservative of the folks in the group. I don't personally feel that we have at this point a style of barbecue in New York. I think that we import a lot of things, and I think that that's the history of New York. We're always importing things. I mean, of course, we have some things that are truly ours, but New York has always been a place where we're borrowing and importing from different cultures and cuisines. And in my mind, saying that there's a New York style of barbecue and saying that we have that so quickly, in a certain sense, doesn't do, in my mind, like, not to be some puritanical, you know, like, barbecue dude, but, like, they've been doing it for hundreds of years down there. And so to say, like, after this became popular for a few years, I don't know. I don't agree with it. I think that we have a long time and a lot of opportunity to really start to articulate our own vernacular for barbecue. But I mean, we totally and blatantly do our best to mimic what you find in Texas, from the wood we use to how we cook it to our flavor profiles. And we're also very, like, cognizant to not, like, it's tempting to say that we want to do something with, you know, a Thai chili oil or this or that, but I'm very, like, stringent about us only, you know, adhering to the flavor profiles that you might see in that region, as to not sort of, like, bastardize a tradition that we imported.
Yeah, let me tell you some of my favorite New York City briskets before I had yours.
Yeah.
At Brisket King in New York a few years ago. Years ago, I had an old restaurant. Sarah Jenkins, who's now the chef of Porsena, owner of Porsena, she used to cook at my old restaurant about 12, 14 years ago. Mm. And one day I came in and she just made a braised brisket in the oven. Mm. And we took it out, gave me a piece of brisket with the juice, put it on a piece of bread. And that was, like, perfect. And then sometimes what I find is that's the perfect moment. Then chefs take this dish and have to do something else, or they hold it till service. But that was one great moment. And then, you know, talk about history with, like, Hill Country Barbecue was in New York. Oh, yeah. And the pitmaster, Robbie Richter. Yeah, you know, guy. Robbie, he's great. Then he went on when Zach Palacio opened Fatty Q.
Yeah.
Robbie was just the barbecue chef there. And I remember being in the yard with him. We just pulled out a fresh brisket, again, out of his smoker. He sliced it, put a little chili sauce on it, and I had it again fresh.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something for me, those moments that wasn't the same thing that the restaurant goer would have had for an experience. I had it, like, directly from the chef when they were prepping it out. So I don't know if you want to say anything about that. The steps that restaurants have to go through to serve food and put it on your plate, how that changes taste.
Well, I think that, you know, there are two ways to look at what you just said. One is that you truly had a better product because of the proximity to the cooking time. Or you had a better product because in both instances there was a theater around the process of you receiving that food. You're hanging with Robbie in the backyard, the illegal backyard of Fatty Q,
right.
As he rips this brisket out of the smoker and he cuts it in, you know, with moths flying, whatever. Like, that's better than any amount of MSG or salt, right? Like, that experience is amazing. And I think that's actually one of the things that's the correlation for me is that it's hard, and I've learned this, you know. I don't think that most people see this publicly, but I think that we've had a huge identity crisis since we opened because, you know, when I opened, I tried to do my best to mimic what I found in Texas. Not be true, not say, hey, we're in New York, but how do we mimic Texas? Okay, well, let's make people grab a tray, let's make them get in a line, let's slice meat, throw it on some butcher paper, make them. And the reality is that for us and for my DNA, that was, I was ignoring what I wanted the DNA of our restaurant to be until, you know, more than a year in when we finally changed it to a restaurant where people sat down and had and service. And that started to finally feel right to me. But it is interesting when you import something and it's different. So much of the importing of barbecue is also the lore, the culture, the setting, the smell, the Texas heat that you just can't get in New York. Part of what makes Franklin delicious is that you waited 3 hours in a line to get it. Part of what makes Louis Miller delicious is that the walls are tainted with a patina of smoke that hasn't been cleaned in 50 years. And you're not just walking into a restaurant like any restaurant. You're walking into truly a time capsule, and you're walking through the same doorway that every person for the last 100 or so years has walked through. And that is remarkable. And I think that it's so interesting and challenging to find this happy medium between, you know, not creating pastiche, but also while honoring a tradition, And also recognizing that a huge part of the flavor is who you're breaking bread with and what that setting is like.
You know, one thing I love about doing the show is that I get the chance to actually sit down with guys like Daniel. You know, we see you in passing. We, you know, we see you at a food event, but it's really great hearing what you have to say. And anything else about this beer, Justin? Because this beer, I think, would go great with Daniel's brisket.
So this beer was, I'm remembering a little bit of, like, why it was made in the first place. It was made for a thing called Swayze Day, which is the precursor to Swansea Day by Cantillon. So
what's Swayze Day?
So Swayze Day is something that Against the Grain Brewery in Louisville, Kentucky, who also does barbecue. They're a barbecue, they're a smokehouse and a brewery. They do this thing called Swayze Day, which happens the day before Swansea Day. So anyone in the beer world knows Swansea Day is this huge Cantillon event that happens all around the world.
Which is the classic sour beer.
The classic sour beer from Belgium.
That goes so, really well with fatty and spicy foods.
For sure. But Against the Grain a few years ago decided they wanted to do Swayze Day because Swansea looks a lot like Swayze, as in Patrick Swayze. And this is the beer that Carton made for Swayze Day this year. And I think it must be some reference to a Patrick Swayze movie, but it's lost on me, like most of what Augie does. So.
Well, that's a good, but it's a little sour pour, so that's a good style. And, you know, what are some other sour beers? I know that Single Cut was making some kettle sours. Who else in New York has made, like, Long Island City Beer Project?
I think everyone does at this point, yeah. LIC Beer Project. Green Point does a lot of kettle sours. Those are really simple beers that, you know, they're using lactobacillus in the kettle.
Peekskill in the Hudson Valley does mm-hmm. a simple sour.
Simple sour, yeah.
So I'm sorry, just because I'm totally ignorant. What is it that makes it sour? How does this happen?
So for most kettle sours, you're using lactobacillus, which is a bacteria that makes, say, yogurt a little tart. You know, it's the same bacteria.
Sure.
So you're pitching that into the boil kettle, brew kettle. And letting it sit for a while, the pH drops, and then you boil it off, and that kills all the bacteria, so you don't have to worry about infecting your brew house.
And you might let your mash, which is like your cooked grain mm-hmm. juice and stuff, you might let
you
that sit a little
bit. You can use acidulated
bit.
Malt, too, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a lot of techniques, but yeah. The idea is the end result is like the palate, it works well with, you know, fatty foods.
Yep.
And there's a lot of others. I mean, Goes is one of our favorite styles from Germany.
Yep. Same thing, lactobacillus and
Pinococcus. Yeah, Westbrook's making a Goes. There's a lot of good beers that you just ask for some sour beers, it might really fit your
There's so many out profile. There now, local and, you know, nationally, too.
Yeah. We're going to keep talking. I'm going to come back and talk about some other people I know that are working with really interesting food and beer pairings. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Maggie. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, it's heritageradionetwork.org. Check us out. Become a member. Sponsor us. There's a lot going on. Over 30 shows, a farm report, great cheese shows, chef shows. And Daniel, you were just on a show not too long ago. Do you remember which one it was?
I don't.
It was some, do you know who the host looked like?
I think Aaron was here. It was with Aaron Fairbanks.
Maybe it was the farm report?
Probably.
Yeah. And what were you talking about? Just about you.
You know, believe it or not, I get a lot of questions about brisket and barbecue. It was largely about that. I think it was. I also opened a fried chicken shop recently, and so I think that it was a lot of what
we should talk about fried chicken.
You know, yeah. Doing was about yeah. that. Yeah.
So what about fried chicken and beer?
Remember for
that one time destroyed the Boston Red Sox. The year 2011, they're in first place, and the pitchers apparently were having pitchers of beer and fried chicken in the clubhouse, and they just kept losing.
Well, remember for WNYC Craft Beer Jam 2 years ago, and Augie was on for Carton Brewing, and his ideal pairing was cold fried chicken with his beer.
Yep.
So let's go into the fried chicken for sure.
So why chicken? You know, so there's brisket in Texas. Everyone's open chicken places. Momofuku, Billy Journey's, Hometown Barbecue, you guys. I mean, I love chicken.
We all just copy each other. That's what it is. There's no original thought anymore. No, you know, for me, I don't really consider myself a chef. I think that what I do and what we've done is we're tinkerers. We like to look at things that are sort of you know, difficult to do. And in the first case, it was figure out how to cook brisket in New York City. And it was also, for me, a lot of what informs what I do is like pulling from historical moments in food in the United States. That's what I really like. I like diners. I like old fried chicken shops. I like Boudin, you know, shacks. I like barbecue huts. And, you know, anyway, so there wasn't any place doing fried chicken that was of the style that I really loved, which was a style that is a wet batter dip chicken that I found at some places in New Orleans. Nobody at all in New York was doing this. Everyone's doing chicken where they dredge it in flour and they fry it. Very traditional Southern style fried chicken. But there were some places that I had down in Louisiana that were doing this model where they dip the chicken in a batter.
So it was like a beer batter type thing?
Well, there's no beer in it, but like a beer batter, like a tempura kind of deal. And then they fry it and it has a very different texture. It's much lighter. It's very, it sort of has like a glassy texture that when you bite through it, it's, I think, very satisfying. A lot of layers of crunch, almost like biting into like a Butterfinger or something. You're penetrating through these, you know, this multitude of layers, which is, I think, really
so
good.
I can taste the chicken. So taste this beer. I want now you as the, okay. as the right. chicken guy,
as the expert.
What do you taste in this beer? What flavors do you taste? Cause I think this beer would go well with
this
fried chicken.
This beer's pretty delicious. I'm surprised that it's as good as it is. It's a pumpkin cream ale. Another one from Carton. I didn't mean to shill for Carton today, but that's always in my fridge. So.
I'm glad you brought beer, and cause not everybody showed up for the show, but I tasted the hops.
Yep.
And the fruit. So I didn't think it was, I thought it was actually like a fruity IPA.
I think I also get a lot of, especially like on the finish, a lot of sort of like anise or licorice flavors, sort of like the dark black aftertaste of like eating some, you know, really dank black licorice. You know that sort of.
I mean, there's a lot of subtle flavors in there. But.
So it's made with roasted pumpkin that's been. It says touched with orange oil, like from an orange, pink peppercorns, and candied ginger.
Mm-hmm. So you got all those flavors. But the fruit came, there was definitely fruit in it.
Yeah.
I don't know, do you think this would go well with your chicken, or would you like something against that sour on the finish?
I mean, I think it would go really well. In the instance of the chicken, there's a lot of heat in it. We have a lot of cayenne. We have citric acid. We have MSG. We have a few other things in it. And it creates a very, it's a very rich, but also very sharp flavor. And I think that this has sort of both like, I think I like the sort of more, less astringent quality, maybe almost more buttery or something about this than. And I think that would actually where the brisket is all fat, the chicken, at least the way that we cook it, is
no, I was really thinking this is it just sharp. Worked out. I think this would be a good fried chicken. So MSG, I know what it means. We're not going to say it on the air because it's a bad word.
Okay.
But you had some fun.
I said not a bad
word. You're going MSG. Give us a statement that sounds like fun with those three letters.
I
you're really witty today. You're going to have some fun with it. I'll be like.
Why is it a bad word?
Because for years, monosodium glutamate is like whatever it is. It's been like anathema. You walk into a Chinese restaurant and say, hey, do you have MSG in your food?
No
MSG. I mean, everyone that I go out with.
That's old school, Jimmy.
Yeah. So it's over now. It's back.
Most millennials are not afraid of MSG.
It's a good thing. You know, I think, David Chen gave this great TED talk about MSG, totally debunking it. And I think a lot of people have at this point. It's an amazing thing. And the reality is that basically everything that you buy at any fast food restaurant, if you ever go to a fast food restaurant, has MSG in it. Like every single thing.
So like My Sweet Goodness?
My Sweet... It is.
Yeah. Very good. See, I got you going. MSG, baby. Tonight. No. Well,
Should we not do that? Should we omit it?
No.
No, we have to keep it in.
I think
well, it's like anything. It's like putting, you know, powdered candy sugar in a beer to build its.
Well, someone should make
profile.
A beer with MSG, and we'll see what happens.
I bet Augie Carton will.
Augie, if you're listening.
But for you, I mean, so MSG is it's a staple of flavors. For every, I thought people stopped using MSG.
We use it in our brine. No, everybody uses it. Everybody uses it. Nobody talks about it. Everybody uses it. It's a little dirty secret. I mean, it's great. And everybody that's listening to this should go out tonight when they're shopping for craft beer. And buy a jar of Accent and put that into anything. I made a pumpkin pie at home the other day and put MSG in it. It truly is like crap.
So what? What's a brand? There's a brand called Accent.
Accent, but seasoning? You can get. But I, you know, the like scary ones with the Chinese writing and like the alarming red label is you know my go-to. I the biggest jar of spices I have in my house is MSG.
Let's do a quick talk about some really great food and beer pairings that we've had. This summer, I got to meet a guy named Jensen Cummings, who you should meet. He's based out of Colorado, and he was toured the country and did different dinners. But he's developing a whole cuisine based around using brewed, you know, ingredients from brewing. And the stuff I really liked he was doing like crazy triple fermented kimchis, which seemed really intense and maybe too intense flavored. But a little bit of that with a little bit of like a pork belly is a perfect pairing.
Oh, yeah.
So I know in barbecue, you're using like some spicy pickles.
Yeah,
but Justin, anything else like that struck you that, you know, it a perfect balance where there's something spicy or really, you know, sour that's accenting?
I had a few years ago, I had a dish. It was like duck with Chinese five spice, and there was a beer. I think it was a Belgian quad, which is a huge, sweet, you know, 10% alcohol beer that went really, really well with that. With that dish, and then, you know, Chinese five spices, it probably has MSG in it, but it's also Sichuan peppercorns and clove and ginger and other things, and it was a really good pairing. Yeah.
And then Maggie, I know you worked at the Nomad in Manhattan for a while.
I still do.
You still do, but have you had any particular like food and beer pairing or drink and food pairing that's on the menu there that we should know about? Because I know there's a lot of cool things that go on there.
I mean, our draft list obviously always changes, but the best thing is our staple chicken with the black truffle foie gras and brioche stuffed under the skin. That's my spiel. And it's served with Brooklyn Brewery's Le Poulet, which is only served at the Nomad and made for us. So that has to be the most classic.
What is that
pairing.
Style of beer, Maggie?
It's a brown ale.
Okay.
So it's like a truffled... It's a whole roast chicken?
It's a whole... Yeah, yes. You could Google it and see my hands in a lot of chicken-holding pictures and our giant cast-iron stubs. But it's a whole roasted chicken with black truffle foie gras and brioche stuffed under the skin before they roast it. And then you show it to the people before they eat it. It's part of the process, part of the experience. And then the chefs carve it up for you. And you get your plate with your breast on it, and then you each have your own little cast iron pot with the dark meat topped with brown butter sabayon, crispy fried chicken skin, and crispy Brussels leaves.
That sounds really good.
Another Brooklyn part of the brown. Spiel.
So are you doing anything to top that, Daniel?
Well, you know...
And then it comes with La Poulet, the Brooklyn...
So yeah.
It's a sour brown ale? What kind of brown ale is it?
Just a... No sourness in it. Just a brown ale seasoned with pairing ingredients of the chicken, so it's very like
it's an easy duck and decoy at EMP.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Well, they are sisters restaurants.
You know, this got me thinking of the classic thing that people make called beer can chicken. Why we talked about why we didn't talk about it before, I don't know. But the idea is that you take a can of beer, cut it off, and you. Lodge it into, you jam it into the bottom of a chicken, and then you smoke it. And the idea is that as the chicken heats up, the moisture of the beer starts to steam and infuse both flavor and moisture into the meat, so it doesn't dry out while the exterior gets smoked.
Have you made it before?
I've made it before, but I've only used Budweiser. Like, I've only used, you know what I mean? Like,
that's all I use when I make it, too.
But I wonder... If we would see some interesting, you know, flavors.
Maybe.
from
yeah, that would be a great experiment.
Oh, I've absolutely asked that question for one of our caller questions on the show before. I said, what beer is best used with beer canned chicken? So
maybe a brown ale. What about that?
Huh. Yeah, brown ale or maybe even like a saison or something a little tartar. Yeah.
Do you do any cooking with beer at the restaurant?
I have over the years. I mean, when I opened Jimmy's Number 43... A lot of my recipes were inspired by, like, Marcello Hazan. And my first restaurant was more Italian, so I cooked with wine. Mm. And I just substituted beer for wine and everything. I put beer into my tomato sauce, beer into my chili, beer into finishing sauces in the pan. And I still believe in it. One of my favorite recipes, go to ilikepig.com. We still have the Pig Island cookbook. It's a very simple thing. You start with, like, you know, in a pan with saute little onions, bay leaf, and bacon, you know, not in that order. But then you just put in a splash of a beer. It can be almost any beer, a hoppy beer or brown beer. Let it reduce a little bit. Toss it with pasta with some fresh cream. You know, but those flavors come out. And I think it's cooking with beer and wine. They're very similar. People will disagree about techniques, but... Honestly, it's liquid with flavor that's evaporating. Mm-hmm. You know, the same way you can improvise a little cider vinegar. I mean, I feel like many different liquids that can be used in cooking. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I'm willing to experiment. I don't know about you.
Yeah,
are you cooking?
Yeah.
Are you cooking with wine or beer in your places?
Well, not in the restaurants. I mean, that isn't to say that we're not drinking sometimes while we're cooking, but it's rarely going into the food, especially with barbecue. But at home, all the time. Constantly. I cook. For somebody that works in this industry, I would say that most of my meals are home cooked at this point, and I'm usually using wine. Recently, I bought a bunch of ciders. I've been like trying to get more into like the sort of champenois style of fermentation for cider. Is that the right word?
Yeah. I mean, sparkling champagne style. Yeah.
Right, but like the large format ones that have like more funk to them.
Yeah, yeah.
And even last night I was like making a ragu and I added some to it. It was great.
I'm in Cider Week. NYC has started on Friday, so it's a good time to talk about cooking with. I feel the same way with cider, but also with beer. Beer is so much of it is water. You know, the original ingredients. Mm-hmm. That a lot of things. If I'm stirring a sauce or a soup, I need to lighten it up. Mm-hmm. Just mm-hmm. put a splash of beer in. Same way you could with a cider, and the same with wine. So, you know, there's more to it, but. But for you to talk about cooking with beer, and you're going to be expanding your beer program.
We are, yes, and it's continued to grow. The chicken place, it's 200 square feet, and we have I think 5 or 6 beers in that little restaurant in Midtown. And then the barbecue place is, I think we're now like 20 beers deep on the menu. And because we don't have any draft system, what we're just doing is buying literally like 2 cases or 3 cases of a bunch of avant-garde beers.
Yeah.
I mean, 80% of our inventory is still, you know, like Abita and these sort of things that people want to just like pound. But for the first time, we have now, you know, this sort of like reserve selection of stuff that never had before, and it's exciting to the people that have come and are only expecting beer to be an afterthought at a barbecue restaurant, which I think it often is. So you know, it's a great educational process for both myself and for them.
Sure. And Justin, let's just do a quick roundup. What's a beer that you would recommend for him to serve A with brisket and B with fried chicken?
Let's see, with brisket. I mentioned it before, Founders Dirty Bastard is a really good beer. And it comes in bottles, I think maybe even cans now, so you can buy a package, you don't have to buy draft. For fried chicken, Saison DuPont, I think, is a good
great
beer
one.
Too.
Yeah. I always like the classics. Yeah. Maggie, any suggestions for his food and beer program?
Oh, I love the Transmitter Saison right now.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Is amazing, and we have it at the Nomad
from Long Island City, so yeah. Super local and really, really delicious.
Yeah, it's the first pour they have like on the reserve list at maybe not the reserve, some list at 11 Madison Park when I went there with my sister for my 6-hour dining experience. They greeted us with Transmitter's special.
That sounds great.
Yeah,
and I would be a pitch for the new Interborough, which is out in Bushwick. I just had last week a special harvest ale that he made with mostly hops and malts from upstate. I would say that would go with your fried chicken. You should get to know Interborough, guys. It's also super fresh, local. You know, there's enough hop and malts to go with. And I'm sticking with Rodenbach or a Flemish red style for, mm-hmm. like, the briskets and other, like, fatty meats.
We'll have to get them on the menu. We'll make
it. Yeah, you got to get Interborough. There's so many great new breweries here. You should probably just have a few more. You know, that'll shine. And good luck to you in the future. I know you guys have big plans.
Thank you.
I was really proud of you guys at Pig Island this year. And one last thing, the boudin that you made, tell us that recipe because it was awesome. You served boudin and it was so you could squeeze out of the casing onto bread.
Yeah, we weren't sure what to do. And what we decided to go with is this sort of Cajun style boudin sausage. And what's very unusual about it, because, I mean, there's also obviously like French boudin, which is, you know, a poached sausage. But and in this case, what's interesting is that you're grinding up pork liver, pork shoulder, and also, and you're adding, you're poaching that, and then you're adding cooked rice to it. So the whole thing is cooked before it goes into the casing. And then the sausage itself gets poached again in the casing. And so at the end, the texture is a lot more loose than you know, a more traditionally stuffed sausage. And so after you heat it, the process of eating it, because the casing is soft, is usually extruding it kind of like Go-Gurt into your mouth. People seem to really like it at the event. It was risky because, you know, I think a lot of people are not super familiar or comfortable with eating liver and having that sort of irony flavor. But everybody was stoked. It was great.
No, I was really impressed to see you go outside of brisket and fried chicken. So
yeah.
You did a great job. Hey, coming up, Cider Week NYC. I'm pretty sure that every show on this network will be doing some kind of cider show next week. We've been over the last year doing a lot of special recordings with great cider makers, and this week and next, Dave will be posting a whole bunch of Beer Sessions Radio cider shows. So keep listening, and that's it. I'd like to thank our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to Justin, Maggie, and Daniel for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network, and thanks for being our producers, Justin and Maggie. You guys rock it out. And engineer David Tatasciore, thanks for listening. See you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo, woo, woo.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.